I still remember where I was the first time it hit me. I maybe do have ADHD. And it's funny, I posted a TikTok the other day about having ADHD, and a good friend of mine texted me and said, "Remember when you swore to me you didn't have ADHD?" Oh, goodness. Well, listen, if you relate to that at any point in your life, I want to share a podcast that you should tune into. It's called ADHD Aha, hosted by Laura Key. It's candid stories from people who share the moment it clicked that they or someone they know has ADHD. In each episode, you'll hear heartfelt interviews about the unexpected, emotional, and even funny ways that ADHD symptoms can surface for adults. And it doesn't always look the way we thought it would. So check it out. To listen to ADHD Aha, search for ADHD Aha in your podcast app. That's ADHD Aha, with Aha spelled A-H-A. Hello, you sentient ball of stardust. Welcome to Struggle Care, the podcast about mental health, self-care, wellness, by a host that really hates the term self-care and is not super great at wellness. I'm glad that you're here, and I'm glad that you're going to listen to me and this next guest. I've got Yolanda Williams on today, who has an organization or company. What's the best way to say that? Is it your company, your organization, your brand?
Brand.
Got it. Decolonizing Parenting. And I love that. And if you're not a parent, I hope you stick around. I find that sometimes in the world of trying to reparent ourselves, there's something that can be really healing about listening to people talk about parenting, particularly listening to them talk about wanting to be good parents and how they're failing and how they're wanting to do better and what they think about parenting. So I'm glad you're with us. And Yolanda, I'm super glad that you're with me. Both of us had really rushed mornings.
So rushed. I'm so tired.
And the amount of podcasts that I roll into with zero plan would, well, actually, it probably wouldn't shock many people. I don't tend to have a plan about anything.
I tell people, though, like it's a thing. I'm just like, listen, it's conversational. I don't have questions. It's because I don't want to have them. I don't want to send you questions because that means I have to do pre-work. Ain't nobody got time for that.
I know. And I try to check with people because I try to appreciate that some people really need a plan. I am so happy to shoot from the hip.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyways, we were like talking about something and I was like, wait, hit record. It's going to be good. I was sharing that my morning was a little rushed because I thought my daughter was sick. And then she made a miraculous recovery, as many four-year-olds do, once she realized she had to actually stay in bed for the morning if she was sick. And so I had to rush her to school. And my older daughter actually sleeps with me. And we sleep really well together.
I don't. Mm-mm. I haven't had a good night's sleep in 4 years. It's difficult. So like recently, Casey had a post about sleep training and I commented and I got, I was like, well, crying out is traumatizing. And the thing about me is I'm going to say what I'm going to say. Right. And some people agreed. Some people were just like, you know, why would you say that? That's not what she's talking about. And the thing is, I understand the desperation because I still haven't had a good night's sleep. Gia wakes up. She just started sleeping through the night at 3, but she sleeps so terribly that I wake up multiple times a night just to switch to the other side of the bed. I am on the edge of reason of the bed, right? I'm like floating. The way that my mattress is now, like each side has a divot of me. And then in the middle is like a hill. So yeah. It feels weird to even sit in the middle because it's just like, this doesn't feel right because that's how poorly she wants to be under me. And I think that's from nursing whenever she wanted to. And she wants to be touching me and it's terrible. So I understand the like desperation was just like, I need to get some effing sleep because I'm going to lose my mind. I feel that.
Well, and I think that's probably why my daughter and I sleep okay to like it's so it's such a different experience is because I didn't co-sleep from birth. Like I did sleep train, I did cry it out, and so she got used to sleeping. She never really had that like skin to skin all night long, and so she just like lays there like a little log, and so do I. You know what I thought was really interesting? So for anyone listening, I did a post about how I had sleep trained and I did use cry it out, and what I found really interesting when you had commented cry it out is traumatizing is that because you and I have a relationship, like we have the beginnings of a relationship, we've talked offline, we've sort of chatted about things, we did that live together. It was interesting to me how different it was to experience your comment, because my experience of it was like, hey, that's what she believes. That's what she thinks.
It wasn't like I was like, on you.
Yeah.
I wasn't, like I didn't wasn't what take I was it doing
personally. And it was like easier to hold, like, that's her opinion. It's not about me. And it was just kind of an interesting reflection on like the internet in general, because when I don't know someone, like if I hadn't have known you and you had commented that, like I would have taken it as adversarial.
Yeah.
Like I would have felt attacked. I would have maybe even like pushed back really hard on it. And I did push back really hard on other people that said similar things, but it was like you and I had this container that recontextualized that comment.
And I think that's the important thing we need to remember about social media. The way we interact with each other online is just so nasty sometimes. And I think a lot of times we assume that people are trying to attack you or trying to be negative. And really, I was just stating like what I feel is a fact. And it wasn't like I'm trying to shame and say, and that's why I had a, like a second thing. Like, I don't know if this is what you're saying. I was trying to like clean it up a bit in so many words, because I didn't want you to feel like I was attacking you. And that's also why I made like 5011 response videos, because I wanted to give more context. And that's the hard part, is like, these are some very short form communication style TikTok, you know? So we are I think now they've increased to like 10 minutes. Like, who wants to sit on TikTok for 10 minutes, listen to somebody talk? But I don't, because that's not what it's for. That's not what we want it to be for. So we get these 3-minute sound bites of someone's opinion. And we have to remember, like, it's not the totality of what they're saying, because you had to then go in and talk about in your reply videos to other people. You were like expanding on what you were saying. And I didn't want it to, you know, I'm sorry if I, you know, if I did make you feel away, because I wasn't, definitely wasn't what I was trying to do. And I thought about it and I was just like, well, I probably could have said that differently, but it's something I feel strongly about. And there are some cultural reasons that I talked about why I feel the way I do. And I hope that, you know, I was able to clear some things up for you, because I'm not worried about nobody else.
Well, that's what was kind of interesting to me, was that I think had it been anybody else, I would have felt like what you were saying was that I had traumatized my kid. And then like the natural like jump from that is like, that's a bad mom. But because I've talked to you, like you and I have had, like we had a long live about parenting. And so I know, or at least I think I know, your general opinions about me as a person. So I was able to hold that opinion differently. And it was just an interesting thing. And then it kind of also brought me to, I was thinking so like long about what was interesting about just that, this in general, this concept of sleep and parenting. And I mean, at the end of the day, it's like a no-win situation.
It's a no-win
for
situation.
Moms in general.
And for the children, right? We are either choosing ourselves or choosing them. And so in your case, you were like, I got to choose me because I cannot. And in my case, I was like, I have to choose her because of the cultural context of, she's already born into this body as a, you know, as a Black child, a disabled one at that, a girl at that. So I'm trying to do everything I can to mitigate trauma. And that means I have to suffer. And that's what I've been doing. I'm not even gonna lie to y'all. It's been really difficult to not sleep well and try to run a business or just try to be a good parent. It really is difficult. So I understand what you were saying when you were just like, I would choose this way any day. For me, I didn't feel like I had a choice in choosing my child because of, you know, white supremacy delusion and all this stuff that she has to deal with already coming into the world with a mom who's traumatized by whiteness. That's the things that I have to hold. And so it's interesting how we can see the same, like talk about the same thing. It's just so from two different worlds. And I think that's why we need to learn how to talk to each other to understand the context.
Well, and I think the other, you know, and it's almost a similar idea, is that the way that cultural things play out in my life as a white mother is like, there was just the fact that when I was sleep deprived, I was cold and angry, and I was incapable of being a conscientious parent or a conscious parent, gentle parenting, respectful parent, whatever you want to call it. And you know, that I did not want to be that mother that could not be responsive, right? Like that would have been for me a legacy of isolation and coldness. And like I am blessed to have a great relationship with my mom. But in general, like in the white world, the white community, like daughters and their mothers have a very complex, often screwed up relationship. And I think, you know, it's interesting when we talk about like, okay, I chose me, you chose your daughter. But I guess I see it a slightly different way because like the only, when I look at like the options around sleep, where whether it's like sleep training, and there are other ways of sleep training that don't involve like crying. I know a lot of people do like no cry solutions and things like that. I'm not as familiar with those, but it's like, it kind of seems like there's three options. There's like sleep train your child to sleep in their crib alone, co-sleep with your child in a bed, or just never sleep at all. To me, that's like the only actual option that just never considers what you need is like just never sleep, because then you can always provide, you know, the skin to skin, the close comfort, and there's no risk at all. Physical, emotional, like no risk at all. But that's not like realistic. And I think in my head, moms that co-sleep are going through the same process as moms that sleep train. Like we're looking and going, okay, we have to sleep. We have to sleep. And so if you have to sleep, the choice is you have to either sleep with your baby or you have to figure out a way to get your baby to sleep by themselves. And there are certainly risk factors for both of those. Like we talk about the risk factor. Like I believe in looking at the research that is available, that there isn't enough sort of data that says, look, we have this proof that this long-term really negative impacts. Now, that doesn't mean that there are no negative impacts. It just means that there are no documented right now. And so I had to go in going, it is a possibility that this could have a negative emotional impact. But for me, I also, when I looked at co-sleep, I felt like there were still risk factors there. Namely, like safety risk factors, right? Like there is a possibility that a child could suffocate or asphyxiate in a co-sleeping arrangement. And what I think sometimes happens, and I don't think you and I do this, but I think that like people who sleep train will, the assumptions they make about the mother who co-sleeps is like, she's laying in a fluffy bed of pillows and she doesn't care about risk and she's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then like the mother that co-sleeps, when they see a mother that sleep trains, she makes this assumption of like, she doesn't care about being responsive. She just shut the door and let the kids scream in their feces all night. And it's like, when in reality, like,
that is not what's going on for either one of us.
The mothers I know that co-sleep went, okay, there is a risk here.
Oh yeah.
But you took mitigating factors, right? Like maybe you decided not to sleep with a big comforter. Maybe you decided to not drink. Maybe you decided to. And like, that's what I did. Like I said, how can I mitigate the risk factors that this could have a negative impact? And so I chose, you know, okay, we're going to do a schedule, like a pretty regimented schedule for 2 weeks before we do anything so that you are adequately sleepy. And then I'm going to lay you down. I'm going to practice a bedtime routine. And then I'm going to lay you down. And then I'm going to leave the room for 3 minutes. And in 3 minutes, I'm going to come back in. And for both of my daughters, it actually ended up differently. So one of my daughters could not calm down in the crib. And like, I can tell the difference between I'm uncomfortable, and I'm dysregulated. And so I found that she was dysregulated. She could not be regulated in the crib. So I had to pick her up and hold her until she regulated. And when I felt that regulation, I laid her back down and I did it again, 3 minutes. My other daughter, what was interesting is that I found that if I picked her up, she got more dysregulated. If I kept my little hand on her in the crib and I patted her butt and I said, mommy's here, then she would re-regulate. So like I still co-regulated with my kids, right? 3 minutes, we're out. 3 minutes, we're out. 6 minutes, we're out. 6 minutes, we're out. Always listening for that. Where's your window of tolerance? I want to make sure that I'm in what I deem sort of like a comfortable level of tolerance, not a complete, I can't loot, right? And that was what I was comfortable with, right? I would not have been comfortable with just letting them scream all night. I would not have been comfortable with vomiting and all this. But I also, when I hear about that happening, I think to myself, oh God, that's painful to hear. And I would never do that. And I try to also hold space for maybe if I was desperate enough.
There's always nuance, people. And I even had to say, I have been working from home since I moved out here to Arkansas from California. I moved before I was while I was pregnant. When I found out I was pregnant, I moved near my family. And so I had the privilege of being at home and not necessarily having to leave the house to go do things. You know, she did not sleep well. And I learned that with autistic kids, a lot of them don't sleep well. So sleep training wouldn't have worked for her anyway, you know? And I quickly learned that when I told you my friend got me the sleep trainer. She did. That was what she recommended, was exactly what you just said. And I went and I redecorated the room. I got the blackout blinds. I got the white noise machine. I even got, it was some sort of like a compression like sleeve that she hates because she doesn't like covers. And so I got all these things and I was ready. I was like, I got to get some sleep. Mama gonna sleep chain. I lasted an hour. I just couldn't do it. And because she couldn't do it. And it didn't matter if I was touching her, if I picked her up, she was screaming. And I didn't know at the time that she was autistic. She was about 8 months when I tried this. I didn't get her diagnosis until she was 18 months. Or no, I'm lying. After she was two, I got that diagnosis. So I, understanding that autistic kids, a lot of them don't have very good sleep sort of routines and that kind of thing, I had to learn what was best for us as a family. And I think that is where I always tell people, I'm a conscious parenting coach. I tell parents, you need to figure out what works best for your family. In my family, there's unlimited screen time. That's because we are neurodivergent people over here, and screens actually help me. They've been helping her learn how to speak. She has limited words. She has learned how to speak and sing using a screen. So it's unlimited screen time over here. For me, we don't go to bed early. Her bedtime starts, it's about 10 o'clock. Anything earlier, she wakes up at 4 a.m. And like, this is clockwork. So when she goes to sleep and it's like 9, I'm just like, wake up. Because she does not sleep through the night otherwise, okay? She wants to wake up at 4 o'clock and party. So I had to realize, like, I cannot do things like everyone else. I can't follow all the rules. Like, you know, here's this book of things. I had to do what was best for my family. And I think as long as we always keep in mind, like what you said, I can tell if my child is really dysregulated. I can tell. I have to figure out what they needed. You figured out what each child needed and you went with that. It wasn't like you closed the door, because that is what I hear. When people say cry it out, that's what I think of, because I have seen like on these shows, like The Nanny and stuff, they talk about doing that. It's so brutal to me. And the history of just some of these parenting techniques from the boomers is so brutal to children. And so that is where my mind goes. But honestly, if you are like checking in and making sure like there is no throwing up, they're not screaming into their horse. Like to me that you figure out what's best for your family. That's your business. And my business is making sure children aren't.
What's interesting about that is like, if I'm being honest about, like, I truly believe, like, I don't look down on mothers that co-sleep. Like, I couldn't. And there were a few nights where I would do maybe like the last hour because I was so sleepy. But like, I don't know if it was my anxiety or what, but like the risk that anything could happen, even if I was mitigating the best I could, like I couldn't get over it. I could not fall asleep. If I did fall asleep, I'd jerk awake. I could not function. And so like, I was so afraid. And some of that was my own sort of, like, I had a really difficult time with infertility. I had two miscarriages and I had this like pervasive belief that like, I wasn't allowed to have good things. And if I did, something bad would happen. And so it was like, I can't.
Okay. I'm going to stop you there. So you just saying that like something happened in my body, because I have this, when Gia does something and she scares the shit out of me, I get angry. I get so mad. And I really just started investigating that. And I realized it's because I have a fear that I can't keep her alive. It's a big fear that I cannot keep her safe and I can't keep her alive. But you tied a couple things together in what you just said. And I'm feeling like that is also a part of that anger that comes up for me, right? Because this child who is like so purely like loves me, like I just be like, girl, you love me so much.
Yeah.
Damn. You love me less sometimes. I've never experienced a love like this. And it's overwhelming for me at times. And I'm scared of it at times. I'm getting emotional. It's scary for me because I just want to protect her. So when she does something, I'm just like, oh my God, she could have died. And then all the stuff about myself would be true. Like, I'm not good enough to be a good parent. I don't deserve good things. I can't keep her safe. And I project that with anger. Like, And I'm learning, because that's my job as a conscious parenting coach, but also as a parent, to learn what those triggers are and learn how I project those triggers out into the world. And so I'm learning that when I start to feel that fear and that anger rise up, I leave the room. If she's safe, I just leave the room and I just kind of go and like punch the air or something, because it's there. It's a trigger and it's real and I can't pretend like it's not. But it's my responsibility to make sure I'm not projecting that onto her, because it's not fair. I just want to make sure that she stays alive. And she, and every day I have a sensory seeking autistic child. It's like, why are you trying to kill yourself? Why are you having that in your mouth? Why are you touching that? What, you know, why do you have a battery? I found a, she was chewing on a battery. I was like, why are you doing that? She walked over to me the other day and just vomited. I was like, what the hell? What's going on? In the vomit was one of my crystals. It was huge. She was choking on it. I didn't know. And I had to just walk away. I was just like, I don't know how I'm going to survive motherhood. Can I be a mother? Like, I'm constantly, it's a constant questioning of, am I even cut out for this, you know?
Man, okay, I have so many thoughts, but I'm going to take a pause and we'll come back after the break. Shout out to Claritin for giving me some free samples and for sponsoring this podcast. I am a seasonal allergy sufferer, which means that sometimes I'm lying in bed reading a book that is super happy and my husband says, what's wrong? Why are you crying? Because I am sniffling and he thinks I'm crying. But no, it's just seasonal allergies. Luckily, that does not happen anymore because I use Claritin D. We can live Claritin clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sniffing, sneezing, watery eyes, itchy nose and throat. It's great. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. As for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter, you don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin clear. Use as directed. When Breath Becomes Air by Paul Kalanithi is the exquisitely observed memoir of an idealistic young neurosurgeon attempting to answer the question, what makes a life worth living, as he deals with his own terminal cancer diagnosis. It's a stunning reminder to live while we're alive, a must-read for anyone in medicine, from a doctor turned patient. For healthcare workers, expand your view on patient care and the fragile beauty of our mortal lives through Kalanithi's unforgettable words. Some of the questions Kalanithi wrestles with in this book include, what makes a life worth living in the face of death? What do you do when the future flattens out into a perpetual present? When the future no longer is a ladder towards your goals in life? What does it mean when you have a child to nurture a new life as another fades away? When Breath Becomes Air is a number one New York Times bestseller, Pulitzer Prize finalist, and was named one of the best books of the year by the New York Times Book Review, People, NPR, The Washington Post, Slate, and more. When Breath Becomes Air is available wherever books are sold. Learn more at prh.com/breath. Hey, if you enjoyed my episode on IEPs and you want to listen to more podcast episodes about IEPs, I want to tell you about another podcast you should check out. It's called Understood Explains. This season, the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ertube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. You might have heard me talk about IEPs on my episode, and this latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. I checked out these episodes, and I think that they are a great place for you to go after listening to mine. They go into a little more detail and answer a little more in depth about what an IEP is and whether your child needs one. So listen to Understood Explains by searching for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. Okay, we're back with Yolanda from Decolonizing Parenting. And here's something that's so, I see you with your Uncrustable. Here's what's so interesting to me. Like, I have to admit that when I hear people talk about co-sleeping, I sometimes have to battle like my own assumptions about what that means. Right. Because just like you said, you know, when I hear sleep trainer cried out, I hear put them in the crib, shut the door. You don't care about their needs. And when I hear co-sleeping, where I immediately go to is this sense of how could anyone, for their own fear or comfort, even take the slightest bit of chance that their child would be harmed? Like, because to me, I'm like, my kids feel so precious, feel so right. And so, like, because that's my context, it's hard for me when I hear people talk about co-sleeping, because I think, what could be worth that? What could be worth that? Even if it's a 1% chance, what could be worth that? But like when I hear you, so if that's like the only thing I hear about someone, like that's what I feel. And I know not to, you know, I don't want to say that to them, because what I have learned is like when I listen to you talk like you did right before the break about like that deep fear of like your worst fears confirmed, that you may not be a good mom, that you may not have what it takes to protect them. Like it makes me realize that you're just like me. And I see that humanity, and I see that you love them so much.
You love them so. It's like the worst thing sometimes. Cause I was just like, I'd be looking at her. I'm just like, I would kill for you, Liddy, like little girl. I would literally go to jail for you. I would go underneath the jail for you. And that's a scary thing.
I have thought that before. And it's not a like boast. It's like a fear. It's like if someone were to hurt her, I would not be able to control myself. I would go to prison.
I would go to prison. And see, I have an extra layer.
This is hypothetical. In case someone is listening to this in the future, and I have in fact been accused of hurting someone, this is hypothetical. I would never actually do that. Okay. But yeah, no, it's terrifying. And that vulnerable moment, and it's always like 3 a.m. and you and looking at this baby, and you feel so alone and so inadequate. And I think that what's hard is to like, when I learn things about whether it like parenting tactics without context, it's like I struggle sometimes to hold the humanity of that other mother and not point that out. And I, first of all, I love that like when you talk about decolonizing parenting, and I want to get into that. And I love that when you talk about your house and you're like there are really deep reasons, cultural reasons, like why we co-sleep. And I took, you know, and I took steps to mitigate any risk to that. And we have no limits on screen time. Like I love that talking of like decolonizing parenting isn't just like a list of parenting decisions and traits.
Oh, absolutely not. We have to decolonize. That's the thing. One thing I'm very vocal about, especially on TikTok, is how I cannot stand the parent coaching industry. I hate it, to be honest with you. And I'm part of it, y'all. It's because of the way that it is spoken. We speak about all these things in such binary, you know what I'm saying? Like really just black and white things. And that is probably going to piss some folks off because the majority of the coaches are white. And so it just feels very regimented all the time. It just feels like you need to do this. And it's just like, absolutely not. There's nuance that we have to consider. Everybody has a different, all kids are different, right? What we know universally is that all kids deserve and need kindness and empathy and patience and love and guidance from their parents. That's across the board. All kids need that. Every kid may not work well with certain types of the way, you know, communication styles. This is what comes with learning about your children. And I just hate the way that it feels like, here are some tips and tricks to stop tantrums. It's like, no, that's not how life is.
And it's not even about the kid. Like what I can't stand about, it's like the people who are very sort of like hardcore, like I spank and I do this and I do that. There's this pride of like, I know how to do it. I'm strong. But then even on like the total opposite end, when you get to like super crunchy moms that, you know, they have their own list of like, I only breastfeed and I only coast. Even then it's like, it's still about them. It's like, look what a good mom I am. And I feel like parents are trapped in that, like when they're trying to look for the quote unquote, like right thing to do, it's like this minefield of making the decisions that make you a good mom, as opposed to making it child centered.
And that's my point, right? And that's why I chose to do, I had to be child centered in everything that I do for cultural reasons. And when we talk about decolonizing, I went back and I read stuff around ancestral ways of parenting, and I wanted to do that. I did not want to do things that were sort of rooted in like an individualistic society. The problem is that we live in an individualistic society, right? And so the reason why I had, to this day, am not getting any sleep, am feeling sometimes trapped by parenthood, by motherhood, is because the village is dead for all of us, right? We are not living the way we're supposed to be living. This whole siloed,
nuclear.
That one, yeah. But, you know, the nuclear family structure is not a natural structure and it's fairly new. And we have to understand historically, this is not how families functioned. And so when we start to look at like how race and class played a really big part into how we parent today, I want to know parts of that. The problem is that I don't have the village, right? So I'm trying to do things like ancestrally that require a village without a village. Don't get me wrong. My family's out here with me. They help as much as they can, but we don't live together. And that's why I am doing the whole, I'm building an intentional community with 8 other Black mothers, because we all need to be in very close proximity to one another to receive the help that we need to be better parents. So when I don't have it, because there's days I just don't, and those are the days I call just keep everyone alive days, where I don't do shit but lay down and she gets to basically run the house. I'm just trying to keep her alive that day because I don't have anything to give her. I'm out of spoons, I'm out of energy, I'm burnt out. If I was in a village, though, someone would come and take her, right? And entertain her and be with her and feed her properly. There's a lot of chicken McNuggets that happen on that day. And I don't care.
Well, the proximity thing is huge because, like, I'm really blessed to have some very close friends. Close, emotional, intimate, vulnerable. I can tell them anything. But none of them live near me, with the exception of one or two. And the ones that live near me have kids my similar age. And you would think, like, oh, so they're such great help. It's like, no, we can't help each other at all because we all have the burden of our own whole nuclear family and house and care tasks. And like, it takes all of our time just to take care of what we have here. And, you know, one town over, it takes all of their time to take care of their stuff there and the schedule, that it's actually really hard to get together. And when you do get together, it's like you can get together for a social thing. But that's different than like, let's wash our clothes down by the river.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Or like, my kids are going to run over to your house because I have something to do. And then maybe I'll make dinner and we'll eat together. I mean, I used to be jealous of, like, in no way, like, covet, like, Mormon polygamist wives. But I do sometimes get jealous about, like, the setup of, you know, well, 3 houses together with one shared backyard and everyone is just helping each other. And
I mean, but you can do that now, though. But you can. Like, I'm literally working towards that very thing. We ain't gonna be polygamous, but I'm literally working towards that. We're going out to Georgia, we're forming a land trust, and we will do that exact thing, farm and everything else, because these systems are not set up for healthy families. If you really think about it, everything when it comes to how we sleep, how our children sleep, to us, their decision to go to college, everything is really centered around capitalism. It really is. I'll send you this video when we get off, and it's around the why sleep training came about. And a lot of it was rooted in racism, but a lot of it was also because of capitalism, because of the church that said, hey, sleeping communally is perverse. It's, you're not supposed to do it. It came from disease, because people were so nasty back in the day that a lot of people were catching diseases having to live in such close proximity together.
So you're forming a community.
Intentional community. So, and I'm doing that because I am trying to go back to that village where we are there for one another. There's a communal kitchen, but we have our separate dwellings and so on and so forth. It is necessary. Like, we can do that. But even just the other day, a friend of mine called me, and she was just like, hey, if you need me to help you with Gia while you get prepared for your parenting conference, let me know. And I was just like, yeah. So she came over and watched Gia while I worked. Like, that to me is a way that we can be in community with one another. It doesn't have to be where I hope that everyone starts getting back to the whole village mentality in an actual village. But since a lot of us feel like we can't, I want us to start thinking about, like, how can we use what privilege we have to help someone else and vice versa, right? People hear privilege and they get so upset because they think I'm only talking about race. But I have privilege of time because I work for myself and I work from home. And so that same friend, I go pick her daughter up from school 3 days a week. And from school and take her to the child development center and come home. Hour and a half out of my day to help a friend who otherwise would not have any way to transport her child. That is me being a village member and a community member. She then was just like, I want to help you do the same thing. So she came over to my house and helped me with Gia and brought her daughter, and they played while I worked. And I was able to get some work done distraction free, kind of, with the help of another adult, right? So we can figure out, how can we be there for each other? If you have the resources where you have time and you love to cook, and you know your friend does not have time, but they need a home cooked meal, cook some extra food, and maybe they can, I don't know, watch your kids sometimes. Like, we just got to talk to each other and figure out what each other needs and what we can do for one another and start to live that way, so we're not so dependent on these systems and we're not so individualistic.
That's great. Okay. After we take a break, I want to come back and ask you about some specific things that people can do to start to decolonize their parenting. A few weeks ago, my husband's beloved grandfather died, and it's been a really sad time for our whole family. But one of the moments of light in this whole process was shortly after he passed away, I got an email from my mother-in-law, and she had sent all of us a link to his Storyworth book. I don't know if you're familiar with Storyworth, but I have a new appreciation for them now that we have a Storyworth book on my husband's grandfather. Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. Storyworth makes the writing process a breeze. All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story, long or short, it doesn't matter. And then you get emailed a copy of their response as they're submitted in the course of a year. You'll get to enjoy the retelling of their stories that you already know or be surprised by stories you've never heard before. And after that year of fun, Storyworth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself. I am so grateful to my mother-in-law for doing this with her dad. We love it. Families love Storyworth. That's why it has more than 25,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot, with millions of stories preserved since they were founded over 10 years ago. So Mother's Day is coming up, and I want to give all the moms in your life a unique heartfelt gift that you will cherish for years. Right now, save 10% on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/struggle. That's storyworth.com/struggle to save $10 on your first purchase. Whether it's Mother's Day, Father's Day, or just because you know that sometimes time is short and you want to capture those memories.
Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries while keeping the kids in the United States? Well, believe it or not, 6 years later, there are hundreds of families who have still not been reunited. Although we as a community may feel hopeless at times, I recently learned about an organization called El Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice. Since 2018, they've reunified over 100 refugee families ripped apart by Trump's zero-tolerance policy. Once reunited, El Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling that they need in order to heal and get on their feet. You can find the link to donate to El Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, alotrolado.org/volunteer. That's A-L-O-T-R-O-L-A-D-O.
Okay, we're back with Yolanda from Decolonizing Parenting. And I do want to say one thing that I love about you. Can I do that?
Oh, I will take a compliment. Okay.
One of the things that I've noticed about a lot of parenting experts and parenting spaces, particularly the ones that are led by white women, is that whether they intend to do this or not, there's this message that if you could just master, and they do this even in like gentle parenting spaces, if you could just master gentle parenting, you wouldn't be struggling so much with parenthood. You wouldn't have so many behavior problems with your kid. You wouldn't have, like, it wouldn't be this hard. Like, and so a lot of it draws a lot of people in because they are experiencing a really tough time with parenting, and they're looking for like the hack that will make everything easier. And what I appreciate about you when you talk about parenting and conscious parenting is that even when we are doing all of the quote unquote right things, we're being conscious parenting, we're being responsive, we're in an environment that itself is going to be the barrier. And so we're still going to have survival days. We're still going to get angry and need to walk out of the room. And that's not because we're not being a good enough conscious parent. It's because there's no amount of conscious parenting that is going to overcome being a single parent, or living in a capitalistic society, or needing to go to work when you haven't slept, or having been traumatized by your own parents and now still dealing with this. And I find that that is rare in the parenting world to talk about that at the same time.
Yeah, it's disappointing. And it's the reason why I choose to be so vocal about my own hangups and my own mistakes. I want to humanize this whole thing. It is not just about like talking softly and giving choices and like, absolutely not. The conscious part of conscious parenting is you being conscious of your trauma, your mood, your mindset, how your socioeconomic status may be impacting, right, your decisions that you're making. And it's going to look different for everybody because of these issues around race and class and privilege. So my parenting as, you know, a Black single mother who has an invisible disability, but who is able-bodied, parenting an autistic child is going to be completely different than yours, right? And I want to hold space for all of that nuance and just tell people, like, the more that you go within, the easier it does get, the more habits you can form to be conscious. But I feel like what these coaches are doing is telling people how to do conscious parenting instead of how to be conscious people. And so that's where it's different for me, because I just want you to be a conscious person, because those conscious, as we learn more about ourselves, about our triggers, about how we respond to those triggers, how we communicate, our coping skills, it's not just the parenting that's affected. It is literally every single relationship with every human being we come across. And so my goal with conscious parenting is not just about these kids. It's really about the world, right? Because I think about how many hurt people are walking around here and we don't know how to communicate. I mean, look at that thread, your thread. Like, we can see it. People don't know how to talk to one another. We don't care to have respectful communication with one another. So many hurt people walking around here being hurt and just bleeding all over everybody and not caring. And I just envision a future where people do care. Because we've been empathetic. We've listened to them. We've told them that their voices matter, that their feelings matter, but there's boundaries, right? You don't get to speak to me like that just because you're upset. We've taught them boundaries. We've taught them respectful communication and tact. And we've also taught them that everyone is not deserving of respect all the time, right? How to advocate for yourself. When to be violent. Like, for me as a revolutionary, there's space for violence in this world, just not against the most innocent among us, which is children. So it's like, having that conversation, teaching those things to our children for a more liberated future for everybody. Like, that's how I approach my coaching business versus, like, it feels like very present the way that people are coaching people versus me. I'm more like futuristically. We're doing this for future generations. I want my daughter to not have to go through the things that I'm going through now. So I'm hoping that she is just like this. Because it's like normalized and it's who she is. If she chooses to have children, that she just does this naturally. She's a conscious parent naturally. And it's just a freaking preset. It's not, you know, she doesn't have to learn it. It's just who she is. It becomes who her children are. And if we had millions of people who is just how they are, the world would look completely different.
It's so powerful what you said about violence, because whenever you hear parents be like, if somebody hits you, hit them back. And it's like, that doesn't sit right with me. And when I became a parent and I have kids, there's also something that doesn't sit right with me to tell my daughter there's never a reason to push someone. There's never a reason. And I've told her before, like, if you don't like the way that an adult is touching your body, you tell them to stop. And if they don't stop after the first time, you start screaming and pushing. Right. Like, and I've told her also, if anyone is ever hurting your little sister, you are to immediately physically engage with them. Like you said earlier, like, everything is nuanced, but like, I don't find any benefit in teaching my white daughters that passivity is always the right thing. And like you said, it's not about violence is never the answer. It's about oppression is never the answer, right? Like, no, don't ever push or hit your sister. She's little. She's your sister. But absolutely.
And don't allow anybody else to do it.
Don't be letting anybody else do it either. One of my good friends, who's also a therapist and does parenting stuff, she's like, I tell my kid, never start a fight. But if somebody else starts one, you need to end it.
You have to finish it.
And she doesn't mean like be bigger, stronger, hurt them. She just means like you're not going to lay there and just let somebody punch you.
No, no, we're not. I don't want you to ever start anything. And that's the problem. Like, and this is why I follow up so close with her at the park, because she is, like I said, she's autistic. She doesn't understand boundaries, right? So just the other day at the park, she pushed this girl so hard and I was very close. So I was able to tell her, like, I'm so sorry. She's not supposed to be doing that. And Gia wasn't looking at me, but I was just like, Gia, we don't push. And like, we need to go over here. the problem is that, again, folks just see the action and they don't have any, they're, you know, and all these things will circulate on like TikTok. And what would happen if your child got pushed by this bigger child? My bigger child is autistic and doesn't understand boundaries. So I'm, as a parent, I'm right up behind her. But that's also my fear as a child who is autistic and cannot speak up for herself because she does not speak very many words, that she's going to be harmed. So I'm very overprotective of my kid. And I hope that she's able to do some sort of self-defense classes because I want her to learn some jujitsu. I want her, and I want self-defense in like the martial arts because they also teach you like restraint. Yes, restraint.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I actually really, this is totally a tangent at this point, but it's important. I love jujitsu. I plan to have both of my daughters do it because especially some of the gyms, like they actually teach it with an anti-bullying curriculum where they talk about like, we never use our skills to hurt anyone. But if somebody is hurting us or if someone is hurting someone else, we use our skills to hold that person down and call for a teacher.
It's a mindset shift for kids and to really how we think about violence needs to shift. And the thing about violence in a country that was literally built on violence, it perpetuates violence every day and how it does not take care of its citizens and skews the perception of what violent people look like. We have to be cognizant of the messages that we give our children, especially white children, around violence. I posted on TikTok recently, a Black woman said, white people don't whip their kids. And I was like, who told you that shit? Like, they certainly do. What are you talking about? But that is the perception that a lot of people have. And that's why when, as a Black coach, I hear that's some white people shit. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that gentle parenting. That's white people stuff. And I'm just like, so what I'm hearing you say is that white people are more inherently gentle and that inherently more loving with their kids. And we are not. That's what you're saying. You may not know that's what you're saying, but you're basically regurgitating really racist rhetoric. And that's just absolutely not true. And then the thread of people are just like, I got my ass kicked. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, when I think about the stereotypical picture of like a father with a belt saying like, come here, it's always a white father. Like, at least that's what I saw with friends and family. I have to start to land the plane here, and here's how I would love to end it. I'd love for you to share something in your parenting that is working really well right now. Just like a joyful sort of like, maybe it's a strategy or intervention or like a way of being that seems to be working really well for you.
So when G and I got COVID back in January, I was trying to figure out what the hell we're going to do for 10 days. And it turned out she teaches me so much. This is the whole point of that, is that she teaches me a lot. And I feel like if parents are open to allowing their children to teach them things, they would learn so much. What she taught me was the value of slowing down and the value of visioning. Because she was like, I don't want to get out of this house. I'm like, I don't know what to do. So we would just take drives in the country. And I was resisting every day for 10 days. We took a drive because she was like, I got to get out of this house. But now it's like a thing that we do. We take drives through the country almost every night. And this is, you know, we're trying to move onto a farm in the country. So it actually allows both of us to like just be in the environment that at least I want for us to be in. And I get to vision and I get to slow down and I get to not be on my phone because I'm always on it. And I really get to like, I point out things to her. Oh, do you see the cows? Because I live in Arkansas, y'all. Do you see the cows? Do you see the horses? Like, and we stop sometimes and like look at ducks and throw rocks into the pond. And her just sort of, because she used to throw tant, like she would fall all the way out if we didn't leave the house. And that was the only way. And I thought it wasn't going to be enough. And it is. Every day she puts her shoes on the wrong feet and we go and we get into the car. And she is so excited just to take a drive. And we've seen deer, you know, I'm just like, please don't come in front of me, deer. Don't do that. But it allowed us to slow down, allowed me to slow down and to vision the life that I hope, which is a slow life, which is a life filled with ease and rest and more visioning and not this frenzy that we're constantly in and not the social media that I'm constantly on. This is what I'm. What she made me do is what I actually want to be doing. But I resisted it. So just listening to her and being able to learn from her that's to me the biggest lesson. It's just like, she knows things too. She knows things and be willing to listen to it.
Okay, so where can people find you if they want to come and learn more from you?
Okay, I have a website, parentingdecolonized.com. I'm also on all the social media. So Instagram is spelled funny. So I'm going to give you the, I'll give you the link. But I'm all on all social medias. And I also have my own podcast called Parenting Decolonized. And it's available anywhere you listen to podcasts except for Spotify. And I talk about how we can decolonize our parenting to raise more liberated children. I do center the Black family, but these conversations are for everybody. Because I believe, especially for white people, y'all need to be hearing these stories and understanding these things as well.
Well, Yolanda, thank you so much. This was an awesome conversation.
Yeah, it was so much fun. Thank you for having me.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us